This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's a new year and a new Congress, but so far it's the same old story in Washington, a lot of talk and not much action. Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson join us for a look at where Congress and President Obama might be able to find some common ground and which presidential proposals and congressional legislation don't have a chance. And we'll take a look at the early lineup of potential presidential candidates. November 2016 is going to be here before you know it. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Howard and Ken, good to have you this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Ken, start us off. What is the trivia question for today?
Well, I don't have an Ohio trivia question. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I do have a Kentucky trivia question.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
And that is, as you know, last week Wendell Ford died. He was a former senator, actually Senate Majority Whip,
yes.
And he was former governor. So he was elected to governorship, governor and senator. But who was the last Kentuckian who ran for governor, senator, and Congress, the House?
Okay, so who ran for all those offices?
Ran for all those offices.
Right.
Okay. If you think
and
you know...
In fact, he has to have won two out of the three.
Okay, and if you think you know the answer to that, give us a call, 513.
Kentuckian ran for governor, senator, and the House, had to have won two out of three elections.
Okay, and if you think you know the answer to that, 513-419-7100. Even if you don't really know the answer, just call up and give it your best shot.
Yeah.
You might win, and if you do, you win a glorious political junkie button as well as the admiration of your friends and family. So make that call, 513-419-7100, if you think you know the answer to that question.
Yeah, I'm scratching my head over it, but I'll see what I can come up with. You know, Ken, you've done two columns recently that I've seen for USA Today, and one was about the State of the Union address. Where you were talking about President Obama laying out this pretty ambitious agenda, which, as you pointed out, most of which has absolutely no chance whatsoever of getting through a Republican Congress. So what was he doing here? Was he just playing to his base? Was he trying to set up the Republicans in Congress?
Yeah, Howard, I think you asked a very good question. The question is, who was the audience for the State of the Union address? And I suspect it was not really Congress because, you know, if President Obama and Congress couldn't get on the same page when there was a Democratic Senate and a Republican House, I wonder whether they can get together when the Republicans control both houses of Congress. So I suspect that the president was talking to the American people. And when you're talking about minimum wage and pay equality and environmental actions like that, well, that's clearly a majority of an opinion that's shared by a majority of the American people. So I suspect that, you know, as presidents have done before that, Clinton used to do that all the time, Reagan would do it all the time, talk beyond Congress and talk to the American people. Now, whether that gets anything done in Congress is very, very questionable. But what startled me most, or what struck me the most about the speech is that, if anything, he didn't sound chastened at all by the Democratic landslide defeat in November of 2014. And matter of fact, he never seemed to have acknowledged it. He said after the elections that, well, you know, it means that we should start working together, but the Republicans were flabbergasted. They think, as President Obama always said, elections have consequences. Well, if elections have consequences, why is he being so mean to us? So President Obama really basically spoke beyond the Republican Congress and towards the American people.
Well, I mean, he's looking at, you know, his approval rating has been going up. Washington Post, ABC News poll had him at 50%.
Yeah, no, it's definitely moving up, but of course Congress remains in single digits, if not minus numbers. But his numbers have moved up, and Democrats are saying, why couldn't they have moved up before, in 2014? But of course the president will say, well, how come all you Democrats ran away from me in 2014? I mean, if you think of all the Democrats who ran for the Senate and House, so many of them wanted nothing to do with Barack Obama, and that still didn't save their hides in November, and now the president is rebounding.
Yeah, now they're all complaining about, you know, well, this guy, oh, yeah, great, you're 50%, a few months too late. But as
you
point out, they were the ones that ran away from him. It happened, you know, right across the river here in Kentucky. And, you know, I mean, that was a consequence of it.
Yeah, I understand Kentucky is the home of this week's trivia question.
That's what I understand, yeah.
And we're getting the calls lined up, quite a few coming in. And as soon as we get a few more lined up, we'll go ahead and we'll see if anybody has the right answer to that. Ken, one of the president's ideas that's already fallen by the wayside was the idea of taxing college savings plans. Is there anything on the agenda that he laid out that you see surviving and maybe actually becoming reality?
Well, certainly the president is very, very interested in achieving these trade deals with Asian countries. And, of course, the Republicans are all in favor of that. If anything, Obama's disagreements on that issue is with his fellow Democrats, like Elizabeth Warren and Harry Reid, who said it's bad for the environment, bad for labor, bad for jobs in this country. So ever since Bill Clinton pushed NAFTA through, and I guess 1993, the Democrats have really been the party against so-called free trade, and the Republicans have favored it. There's also some tinkering around with taxes, the tax system, that a lot of people think that the two parties can go along with. But there's no way that to pay for this ambitious agenda that the president outlined in the State of the Union address, there's no way that it's going to be accomplished by raising taxes. The president didn't do it when the Democrats had control of Congress in 2009 and 2010, and they didn't do it when there was a split Congress in the previous 4 years, and they're certainly not going to get a tax increase passed when the Republicans control both the House and the Senate.
We have some folks lined up to try the trivia question, so let's go to the phones. Hannah in Norwood. Good afternoon, Hannah. What do you think the answer is?
Hi. This might be too obvious, but I was thinking it might be Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell never ran for governor, and he never ran for the House either. He was, I think he was the Jefferson County executive when he beat Dee Huddleston. What? You know something? I have no idea of my son's birthday, but I will tell you what Mitch McConnell did in 1978 and 1984. It frightens me.
It is. It's frightening.
Hannah, nice try. Thank you for calling in. Let's talk with Bill in Kentucky. Bill, what do you think the answer is? Okay, Bill, are you there?
No.
Okay, we've lost Bill, so let's go to Jay in Northside.
You know, wait a second, that wasn't Bill Belichick, the cheater, was
it? No, not okay, Deflategate person. No.
My blood boils when you mentioned Bill Belichick.
No, he's from Kentucky, so this is good Bill, not bad Bill. Jay in Northside, what do you think the answer is?
How about Earl C. Clements?
Earl C. Clements.
Well, Earl C. Clements. Now, that's interesting, but I don't remember him running for the House. But if I should know if he did. I don't think he did.
Wikipedia says so.
Even if he did. I'm sorry?
Wikipedia says so.
Oh, I hate when you go to Wikipedia. No. But anyway, the point is.
Hey, if it's cheating, that's, you know.
But the point is, he's not the last person.
Nice try, Jay. Okay. Thank you. Let's talk
how many times do we talk about Earl Clements on this planet?
It's a first for WVXU, I think.
I think you're right, Howard. Let's talk to Jim in Hyde Park. Jim, what do you think the answer is?
I think it might be John Sherman Cooper. Who was the other guy? Oh, mind you, I never heard of John Sherman
Cooper.
I know he ran for senator. I don't know if he ran for governor or not. I kind of doubt it, but maybe Congress.
Okay, so what was your answer?
He ran for the Senate a million times. He lost a lot. I think he lost to Alvin Barkley once upon a time. But, I mean, he won a lot. He lost a lot. But he never ran for the House.
He was a great man, by the way.
He was a great man, absolutely. Every Republican you don't see. Yeah.
So, Jim, who do you think it is?
I thought John
Sherman
Cooper.
He said John Sherman Cooper.
John Sherman Cooper. Is that Ken?
No, it's not the correct answer. We agree that he was a great guy, but not the correct answer.
All right. Thank you.
Wow.
You
stumped everybody so far.
We'll cogitate on that and call us if you come up with something, but we'll keep thinking about this.
Yeah, and Ken, go ahead and give the question one more time, and then we'll have another round of people try their hand at it and see if we have any better luck.
I started talking about Wendell Ford, who was elected governor and senator from Kentucky, but who was the last person to run for governor, senator, and Congress from Kentucky? And he had to have won at least two of those three positions.
Okay, so if you think you know the answer, 513-419-7100. We'll keep trying our hand at that and see if anybody can get that.
I've narrowed it down to two, but, you know. We'll
yeah, you can't say anything yet. Right. You can't say anything yet.
No.
Can't say anything yet.
One of the other things you were writing about the other day in USA Today was Mitt Romney, who gave a speech down at Mississippi State where he was just ripping into Hillary Clinton and sounding very much like a presidential candidate. I know from reading that column that you've got your doubts about him as the potential GOP nominee in 2016.
I do, and only because I think, I mean, it's not because he's run twice and lost twice, although that has a lot to do with it. I mean, I guess Democrats could point to Adlai Stevenson, who ran twice and then tried to run again in 1960. Mm-hmm. But by then, Adlai Stevenson was old news. I kind of think Mitt Romney is old news in the sense that, one, he did have a lot of opportunities in 2012. He had an unemployment rate that was near double digits. The country was really not especially happy with Barack Obama's stewardship of the country, and he had an opportunity. But more than that, he just seemed to do everything wrong. All the caricatures and all the way that the Democrats tried to define him, he just couldn't get beyond that. You know, the rich, the guy with all the mansions and the car elevators, mm-hmm. and the 47% of the country who didn't understand him, and somebody who seemed to bend with the ideological winds. And I hate to say that, but I kind of think there was truth to that. When he was governor of Massachusetts, he was pro-choice. He supported, I think, stem cell research. Of course, when he ran for president, he was not pro-choice. And then, of course, he
invented Obamacare.
Exactly. He had Romney Care as governor of Massachusetts. And if the Republican Party was basing its candidacy and campaign in 2012 on repealing Obamacare, can you do that with the guy who created Romney Care? And then, of course, the things as, you know, when he said during the debate that he talked about self-deportation, I mean, that's, you know, that's like Mad Magazine. I don't know what that meant, but he just did a whole bunch
we
of things
either.
That, yeah. And you think of all the states, I mean, every except for North Carolina, he lost every single swing state, right. Every battleground state in the country. And, of course, John McCain did too, but John McCain was not going to win after 8 years of Bush and then the war and the economy. But I think Romney had a shot. He didn't fulfill it, and God bless him, but now I think the Republican Party is looking towards somebody else. But who knows? I'm not convinced Romney even runs.
Yeah.
I think he wants to be part of the conversation, but I'm not sure who knows what the Republican Party wants anymore. We saw that there was a big cattle call in Iowa last weekend,
right.
which neither Romney nor Bush, Jeb Bush, attended. And Romney was not really the topic of conversation there at all.
But he's done pretty well in some polling in Iowa
yes,
and
but,
Florida.
You know, first of all, I remember every time Jesse Jackson would run for president, he would be the leader
at the top,
you know, because everybody knows who he is. And having run twice, you know, he has a name ID. But ultimately, you know, we still have 53 weeks to go before the Iowa caucuses. That sounds like a long time, but it really isn't. It's really, really around the corner. And ultimately, and you see him talking, I think, part of the Mississippi speech and in previous speech he gave to the RNC in California, he talked about income inequality. And I think that is a very big issue, and I think the Republicans would be smart to latch onto it. I'm just not convinced that Mitt Romney is the guy to talk about income inequality.
Is he better off staying in some kind of a role as like a national voice for the Republicans?
Well, I think he was, and I think he was very effective in 2014 when he was campaigning for candidates around the country. He drew great crowds and had a lot. You know, he was very relaxed and everything. But already, I think in the Mississippi speech, Howard alluded to a few minutes ago. I think right before that, he was talking to some advisors and saying, "I'm going to be different this year. I'm going to be a different person." That sounds like somebody who's not completely comfortable with who he was in 2012. And I think one of the things that the Republicans liked about George W. Bush, even though they're not crazy about him anymore, but there was a genuineness about him in 2000. He was comfortable in his own skin, and I think voters felt that. I don't think the voters feel that with Mitt Romney.
We'll have more with political junkie Ken Rudin after the break, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. And we also have a new round of people in line to try that trivia question, so hang on, we'll get to those calls. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's see if somebody has the answer to that trivia question. Bill in Kentucky, glad to see that you came back. What do you think the answer is?
Yes, I think it's Happy Chandler. That's a guess.
Good guess. Yeah. Ken?
Happy Chandler was one of the seven dwarfs, as I recall. No, that's a stupid joke. Happy Chandler
was a very good commissioner.
Now, he was baseball commissioner, exactly right, but he never ran for the House.
Yeah. Okay,
sorry.
Nice try, Bill. Thank you. Let's talk with Walt in Loveland. Walt, what do you think the answer is?
You know, I just got beat out because I thought it was Happy Chandler, too, but...
Okay, well...
So you got to give it up sometime.
Yeah. Well, thanks for trying there. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Let's try Robert in Hyde Park. Robert, do you know the answer to the trivia question? Robert, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, do you know the answer to the trivia question?
I was also a Happy Chandler fan.
Happy Chandlers in a row.
Yeah.
That three of a kind beats a pair, right?
That's true.
Okay, so three Happy Chandlers. Thanks, Robert, for giving it a try.
All right.
Should we throw that one out there one more time, do you think, Howard?
Throw one more time.
Okay. One more time. Ken, give us that question again.
The last Kentuckian to run for the Senate, for the House, for governor, and who has won two of those three offices. Can I just say something?
Sure.
I think this is a very easy question. I mean, some of the questions I've given
but
you in the past.
You know the problem with it, Ken? There are too many choices. There are too many choices, I think. Okay. Well, not too many right answers, but just too many possibilities is what I mean. So that's okay, though. You think you know the answer to that question?
I do.
Okay, Ken does. I think Howard thinks he knows. I sure don't. Give us a call at 513-419-7100 and give it your best shot. This is your, as Howard just said, this is your last chance, so I hope somebody in this group is going to get it right.
Yeah.
Ken, you were talking about how the Iowa caucuses are still 53 weeks away, and last week we had the Iowa Freedom Summit where a lot of potential candidates showed up. So far on the GOP side of things, who do you think, of course we know you're not sold on Romney, but who do you think the contenders are, and who do you think are the pretenders in this case?
Well, everybody says, and I agree with this, it's a wide open field. The establishment seems to be rallying behind Jeb Bush, but every time we mention Jeb Bush, or every time Jeb Bush's name is mentioned at a Republican gathering, it's usually followed by boos. And I don't mean booze, but I mean a lot of booze, boos. And when the Honorable Donald Trump gets applause for attacking, although I always thought Donald Trump would be the heir apparent for the nomination.
Very good.
You don't pay me by the joke, do you?
No. Donald Trump brings that businessman's perspective to the whole thing. Are we ready for that yet?
From Neptune, but the thing is that when he mentioned Jeb Bush and the fact that he supports Common Core education standards and the fact that he supports immigration overhaul, the name just got booed. You know, he got booed in that hallway in Des Moines. So he has a lot of work to do, but he has he was always thought to be the Bush who should have run. He probably would have, I think the Mr. and Mrs. George and Barbara Bush thought that Jeb Bush was the guy who should have been the member of the family to run for president in the beginning. But then again, you have the other folks, Chris Christie, who has a lot of suspect and a lot of conservative groups. You know, his issues on guns, but of course, governor of New Jersey, you can't be really pro-gun, but he's a pro-life guy. I think the problem with Chris Christie is that he has the kind of persona that will wear thin when he goes around the country. I mean, there's some people who like the fact that he tells the unions and the teachers and the Democrats and the media where to go, but ultimately, I don't know. You also have, you have Rand Paul, you have Marco Rubio, Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, seemed to do very, very well at the Iowa event. Of course, he just won his reelection in Wisconsin last year, and he's looking very seriously. He started a campaign committee this week to look at 2016. And then there's Ted Cruz, and there's some old names like Rick Perry and Rick Santorum and Mike Huckabee, Ben Carson. The doctor is gotten a lot of strong attention with many Tea Party folks. And then there's Bobby Jindal. I just realized as I'm listening to these names, John Kasich, who's from the he's not from Kentucky, he's from Ohio. Because I've been focusing so much on Kentucky. But I mean, Kasich says, look, he's going to give it a look, and he probably will.
I was waiting for you to get around to him. But he's got and he could have some mainstream appeal. He would probably also get booed in some of those audiences because he supports Common Core, and because he is willing to take the Medicaid money from Obamacare. So he's got those kind of issues going against him among some GOP primary voters.
Right. The argument for Jeb and perhaps for Kasich is that they may appeal to a broader audience in the general election, but that didn't work for Howard Baker. It didn't work for a lot of candidates, or Giuliani, who say, I'll be the strongest candidate in November. You still have to survive a Republican primary, and you still have to have these strong Republican conservative principles that, if you waver on even one of them, like Lindsey Graham, who's talking about running for president, they said, well, he supported Obama's Supreme Court nominations. Well, I don't know. I mean, you have to be perfect for a lot of these litmus test conservatives, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Sarah Palin also said she was seriously talking about it, thinking about it, but if anybody, did you listen to her speech?
Yes, I did. I listened to the whole thing.
Oh my goodness! I'm convinced it was Tina Fey.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing, and a lot of the conservatives have been running away from her as fast as they can.
Well, they should have been running away from her a long time ago.
Well, they used her when she was of use to them. In the 2008 campaign.
There was a column in the Washington Post I saw about that, basically blaming the Republican Party, not to relive and revisit the 2008 election, but clearly John McCain felt that he needed a boost. He was well behind Barack Obama in the polls. He needed something to excite the convention. And Sarah Palin's nomination did excite the convention. It was very exciting. But then, the true Sarah Palin came out. She was not that well-informed and well-prepared. And so when you think of John McCain, who would have been the oldest person ever elected president had he won in 2008, the thought of him picking somebody so underqualified, it says a lot about John McCain, but we don't have to fight. We don't have to refight the 2008 election.
Okay, Ken, we've got five brave souls lined up to take on the trivia question, so let's see if we can get an answer here. Let's talk with Mike in Fort Wright. Mike, what do you think the answer is?
Well, this is kind of an off-the-wall guess. I'm going to guess Ernie Fletcher.
Okay.
Ernie Fletcher never ran for the Senate.
Okay. Mike, thanks for trying. Let's talk with Tim in Green Township. Tim, what do you think the answer is?
I'm going to have to go with Wendell Ford.
Wendell Ford never ran for the House. He was elected governor, and he was elected to the Senate, but never ran for the House.
And lieutenant governor.
Okay,
and
Tim.
Lieutenant, right. He was Louis Nunn's lieutenant governor.
Yep. That's right.
Tim, thanks for trying. Let's talk with Marshall in Florence. Marshall, who do you think the answer is?
Was it Alvin Barkley?
Alvin Barkley never ran for governor.
Ah, okay.
He was Mr. Veep, and of course he was a longtime Senate Majority Leader, never ran for governor.
Marshall, thanks for trying. Let's talk with Holly in Erlanger. Holly, who do you think it is?
How about Steve Beshear?
Steve Beshear never ran for the House.
Yeah.
Rats.
Nice try, Holly. Yeah. Nice try. Don in Harrison. Don, who do you think it is?
How about Jim Bunning?
Jim Bunning is the correct answer.
There we go.
Very good.
This is stunning to me because, first of all, when we were talking about Happy Chandler, I'm thinking, okay, everybody's talking about baseball.
Yeah,
they'll
right.
remember Jim Bunning. But Jim Bunning was, ran for governor of Kentucky. Does anybody remember who he lost to? Martha Lane Collins.
Okay.
He lost to Martha Lane Collins for governor. He was elected to the House in 86. And then when Wendell Ford retired from the Senate in 98, Jim Bunning won that seat and won two terms. But I was going to say, I was going to add, and he also pitched a perfect game in 1964.
Yes, and he's in the Hall of Fame.
Hey, Don, hang on the line so that we can get your address so we can find out where to send that political junkie button to, okay? And
now,
very good.
I met Jim Bunning at a Red baseball game about 2 years ago, and that's why it just popped into my head.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's down here quite a bit, actually. Yeah. And I want to give Jay Hanselman of WVXU, he
knew.
Got the answer to that.
Yeah, he
showed
he came
us
in earlier.
A little piece of paper with the right name on it.
Yep. Don, stay on the line. Pete will get your information about where to send the button to. So congratulations on winning. So
this was the best trivia question ever. Because
I think it is,
so
too.
Yeah, it was,
I love the guess. Earl Clements and Happy Chandler and I mean, all these great names. But Jim Bunning is not that long ago.
No.
Ken, on the Democratic side for presidential contenders, Hillary Clinton seems like she's going to run, but can we be absolutely sure that she's going to?
Absolutely. I always see these things in the media that say, assuming she runs or if she runs, oh my goodness, she's absolutely running. She's doing everything she can. We expect probably an official announcement in April. There's no way in the world she's not running. I mean, she's doing everything, and she's trying to stay out of the headlines, let the Republicans eat their own, which could happen. But
in the meantime, this pack of hers is raising all kinds of money, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she has tons of money. She has tons of endorsements. If she was not running, then all these people wouldn't be coming forward saying that, they're for Hillary. The question is, who, if anybody, runs against her? I mean, it's kind of amazing with an open presidency and the suspicion that the sitting vice president is not going to run, and my guess is that Joe Biden does not run, but that's pretty remarkable. I mean, yeah, as a matter of fact, the last vice president who tried to, when there was an open presidency, who tried to run and didn't get it was a guy named Alvin Barkley in 1952. I mean, talking about Kentucky trivia. But Biden, he's still in single digits. Elizabeth Warren polls well against Hillary Clinton, but she's telling everybody that she won't run. And I know there's a lot of pressure on her to run. I suspect she's not going to. And they're talking about maybe Bernie Sanders, the independent / socialist from Vermont, Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland. So there's some Democrats out there who are Jim Webb, the former senator from Virginia. But I can't imagine anybody. I mean, look, I've been wrong so many times. I was convinced Hillary Clinton would be the nominee in 2008. I never saw Obama taking the nomination away from her. But having said that, I mean, whatever advantages she had in 2007 and 2008, I think are certainly eclipsed for 2016. I can't see her being stopped. I'm not convinced she wins in November. There could be, we have a long way to go, and we have a long way to go before the Democratic nomination. But right now, it's Hillary's to lose.
And you don't think Elizabeth Warren, despite all the pressure, I mean, I'm seeing the buttons and the bumper stickers already starting to pop up for her. You don't think she's going to throw her hat in the ring?
Well, people I know who know her say the answer is no, but it reminds me a little bit about Bobby Kennedy in 1967 and 68. There was so much pressure on him to run against President Johnson. He kept saying, no, I'm not doing it. I'm going to support Johnson. I'm not going to do it. And all the anti-war, anti-Vietnam War folks were pleading with him. They weren't excited about Eugene McCarthy. And Kennedy kept saying no until McCarthy did so well in the New Hampshire primary against Johnson that, like a few days later, he said, "Okay, I'm running." But I mean, so things could happen. But I don't know. I mean, first of all, it probably wouldn't be fair for a woman to run against another woman because you don't see men running against other men, right? So I don't know what. No, I'm being silly about that because everybody says,
"Of course,
well, how could she run? Hillary's running." Well, What did that have to do with anything? I mean, there are a lot of progressives. I don't know what a lot means, but there are progressives in the Democratic Party who are not exactly completely comfortable with Hillary Clinton's views on Wall Street, on incoming inequality, on foreign policy. She seems to have attacked or criticized President Obama for not being aggressive and not assertive enough on foreign policy. And there are a lot of Democrats who said, "Oh no, that's not what we need." But right now, it's look, Elizabeth Warren knows that she's being, there are a lot of people who really, really want her. Right now, the guess is she doesn't run, but there is a lot of pressure, as you say, Mark. There's a lot of pressure on her.
And Ken, it makes me wonder with Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren even being just talked about, if that's going to push Hillary to go farther to the left as she runs.
Well, certainly if Elizabeth Warren, said, now I'm rethinking it, that would probably shock, the team Hillary Clinton and perhaps have her be more assertive on more progressive issues. But right now, she keeps saying, I'm not running. And she's happy to be a progressive voice in the Senate. Question is whether she can get persuaded to make that a national campaign.
Well, Jim Webb seems to be serious about it.
Yeah, he has a committee. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think somebody has to run. I'm trying to think of like the last time there was an open presidency in 2000 when Al Gore was the clear front runner. Mm-hmm. Bill Bradley gave it a shot, but once Al Gore won in Iowa, New Hampshire was basically over. There's very, very few presidential nominations are handed to anybody. You have to work for it, and certainly Barack Obama worked for it in 2008, and I'm sure Hillary Clinton is going to work for it. She knows all the mistakes she made in 2008 by ignoring the caucus states, ignoring the small states. But right now, I don't see a Barack Obama coming out of the woodwork to upset her plans. But we still, again, as they say, Iowa's 53 weeks away. We have a long time, and that's one of the kind of things I would love to be proven wrong, because if you're a political junkie, you want to see battles for the nomination. I mean, if you're a Republican, you're probably nervous about what's going on with the Republican Party, given the fact that everybody in the world is running. But we'll see if that's the same thing with the Democrats.
Yeah, who knows? It's like you say, it's a long time until that Iowa caucus is.
And one name they haven't mentioned is Bill Belichick.
I take it you're not rooting for the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
No, I am not.
We will continue our political conversation with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson after the break, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are the political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter.
Ken, I mean, Democrats around the country have been kind of freaking out ever since the Koch brothers the other day said they were going to spend $889 million on the 2016 election cycle. I mean, that may not sound like a lot of money to you, but to me it sounds like
something. I was, it's about $900 million, they said, right? In the 22 years I was at NPR, I did not make $900 million.
Didn't?
And that's a lot of years. I still didn't make.
You made $901 million. Right?
Well, no.
Oh,
I didn't make that either, no. it is remarkable. I know Republicans were having fits decades ago when the labor unions, upon a time the labor unions used to be a big force in politics, when the labor unions would spend this outside money and the Republicans would say that's not fair, but comparing to what the labor unions had in the 60s to $900 million of the Koch brothers for 2016 is just remarkable. You know, I mean, there's people like Tom Steyer, the billionaire environmentalist who tried to make a deal for a difference for the Democrats in 2014. There's, you know, there's the George Soroses of the world, but nobody comes close to the Koch brothers.
Yeah, they have deep pockets, but there's no way they can match that kind of money.
Yeah, they were more Diet Coke, right? Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. So what do they do? I mean, does it have any impact? $900 million
Well, I mean, yes and no. You could think of all the money that they spent. It really depends on the year. I mean, if you think of 2012, the Republicans had tons and tons of money on the Senate races, on the Romney campaign. But Obama, first of all, had his money too, and he spent it smartly instead of blanketing the airwaves, which is what Romney did in many states. Obama did a lot of networking and door-to-door organizing and grassroots stuff, and that made a big difference. But a lot has to do with Howard, you asked the question whether it'll make a difference. A lot has to do with the mood and the atmosphere. 2014 was a big Republican year, so for all the money that the Democrats had, it didn't make a difference. 2012, or even 2008, the Republicans had tons of money too, but it didn't make a difference because there was such an anti-Republican feeling in the air because of Bush and because of Katrina and because of the wars and because of the economy and all those things. So a lot depends on what the mood of the country will be in 2016. Obviously, the Democrats are pleased that Obama's numbers are moving up. I don't know if that could be maintained by 2016, but as you say, $900 million is a lot of money.
Yeah. What about the congressional races in 2016? I think the Republicans in the Senate have 24 seats up.
That's correct, 24 to 10. That's
a huge difference.
There's a huge difference. And the thing also is that there's not many Democratic targets. The only Democratic targets I could see out there is certainly Harry Reid, who barely won in 2010.
Right.
And the reason he won in 2010 is because the Republicans put up a Tea Party candidate who really just ran a bad campaign. And maybe Michael Bennett in Colorado, but the other eight Democrats, well, they're not all running. Barbara Boxer is retiring. But the other eight seats look pretty safe for the Democrats, whereas on the Republican side, there are questions about Mark Kirk in Illinois and Ron Johnson in Wisconsin. And, I mean, there has to be some question about Portman in Ohio, although I think Portman wins. But right now, I mean, still remains pretty popular. But again, you know, it depends on what the mood is. But right now, the Republicans are in much more danger, much more riskier seats in the Senate than the Democrats, which is the complete opposite of what we saw in 2014.
Well, in Portman's case, there is an actual Democratic candidate who's declared. He's 30 years old. He's a councilman from Cincinnati, P.G. Sittenfeld, who wants to make a very big leap from city council up to U.S. Senate.
Yeah, I heard your report on VXU on that, and it was interesting. I mean, I never heard of him until your piece.
Yeah.
But look, you know, sometimes stranger things have happened. People come out of nowhere, and they wind up winning. But we'll see. You know, right now, I mean, Portman has a ton of money in the bank, and, of course, this talk about does Ted Strickland run again? I mean, there's a lot of pressure on him to run, but we'll see. But right now, if I had to make a pick, I think Portman goes into 2016 with an advantage.
What about the House? I mean, are the Democrats just shut out for the foreseeable future?
I think so. As long as, you know, until the next round of redistricting, I was going to say it's hard to defeat incumbents, but it's not even that. I mean, a lot of incumbents were beaten. Republican incumbents were beaten in 2006 and 2008, and Democratic incumbents were beaten in 2014. Right now, the Republicans have more seats in the House than they did since the Truman administration, which is pretty remarkable. So, I mean, right now, the way the lines are drawn, I can't see the Republicans unless, especially with Barack Obama in the White House, I can't see the Republicans losing control of the House before the lines are redrawn in 2020. And there are demographic changes happening in the country. More Latinos, more African-Americans, more Asians moving into districts. And you have to watch about states like Texas and Georgia, where these demographic changes could make a big difference, but not before 2020, I don't think.
But this Republican majority in Congress, both, you know, on John Boehner's side and Mitch McConnell's side, I mean, they're going to have to come up with a positive agenda that they can sell to the American people, are they not?
Well, I agree with you completely. I mean, it's one thing to be in the minority and be on the outside and hurl bombs when you're, right. you know, when you're outsiders. But as Mitch McConnell and John Boehner both said that, okay, the American people elected us in 2014 to have an agenda. So the Republicans know that as much as they're pleased with what happened in 2014, they have to have a record to maintain their majorities in 2016. So they are trying to come up with stuff. One thing that I don't think helped their cause, at least in the House, is the invitation by John Boehner for Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu to come to Congress in March and talk about Iran and sanctions and the nuclear capabilities and things like that, which is exactly what the worst thing in the world. I mean, look, it was obviously a poke in the eye, a deliberate poke in the eye at the Obama administration, but it also shows that a lot of members of Congress, Democrats included, just don't trust Iran, don't trust that these negotiations will lead to anything. But still, to invite Netanyahu clearly as a snub, as a shot at the president, I don't know if that helped the Republican cause that much.
Ken, so you don't think that Speaker Boehner had a legitimate reason at all for asking Netanyahu to make that speech?
I think it was a combination of two things. I think, obviously, they don't trust the Iran negotiations. And, of course, Congress could do whatever it wants with foreign policy. I mean, they could, you know, we saw when Nixon and Ford were president, the Democratic Congress would vote against Vietnam War funding and things like that. But given the fact that Netanyahu and Obama really don't like each other, and given the fact that Boehner and McConnell and Obama don't like each other, I kind of think it was a deliberate snub. But I mean, on policy reasons, for policy purposes also, I think, I mean, that's part of what Boehner was trying to do. But it just felt they certainly had the constitutional right to do it, but I think Boehner feels that, well, if Obama's going to, you know, bypass Congress with Cuba and immigration and climate change policy and do all his executive actions, which we feel is unconstitutional, well, we could play that game too. I mean, that's putting it a little simplistic, but I think part of it was a little bit of a part of a little peek, a P-I-Q-U-E, at the president.
Doesn't the whole thing with the Israeli prime minister, though, the further the perception that the president's doing a bad job internationally, especially with Israeli supporters?
Well, that's definitely true. The president has made it clear, I don't know if this is a majority view of the country or not, but the president has made it clear that building more settlements on Palestinian land, or at least in the West Bank, is not the way to peace. The president has made it clear that negotiations should start with a return to the 1967 borders, and that's completely anathema to Israel and Israeli support of the United States. I mean, giving back the Golan Heights in Syria, for example, is a non-starter for this point of view. But there's no question that Obama is not. I mean, I'm not going to say he's not a friend of Israel, but certainly there has never been more tensions with the U.S. government and what's going on in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem than there is with this current administration.
There was one interesting thing going back to 2016 politics. Larry Sabato wrote this week. So, you know, what if this presidential election in 2016 is a dead flat tie in the Electoral College? And he pointed out that 33 states, I mean, obviously it would go to the House then, and they would vote by state. And the Republicans control 33 of the 50 state delegations. So the Republicans would win, right?
Well, that's correct if it goes to the House. I mean, of course, that hasn't happened since the 1800s.
No, it hasn't. But, I mean, would you anticipate, I mean, there's this is going to be a close election?
Well, yes and no. But, I mean, the reason, if you don't get, if the president, if the leading presidential candidate doesn't get a majority of the votes, it's because there's a strong third-party candidate. Mm-hmm. And it seems like with all the dissatisfaction with Democrats and Republicans that's out there, and I think that dissatisfaction is very legitimate and very well-earned, I still see no strength or you know, impending third-party or independent candidate who's thinking about running. They always talk about Colin Powell or Michael Bloomberg or things like that, but it just doesn't seem to be happening. And when you think of Ross Perot, who spent $60 million, which was a lot of money in 1992, he spent $60 million, got 19 million votes, and he got zero electoral votes. So, so you could talk about all these independents who might want to throw the election in the House, but until they start winning states, it's still a two-party system. I mean, look what's going on in California. They don't even, basically, everybody runs on the same ballot, and then the top two finishers wind up running against each other in November. So there is no more choices for libertarians or socialist workers or Green Party candidates in California in November because they get wiped out in the all candidates on the same ballot system. And that seems to be a possibility of spreading around the country.
What do you see, you know, up in Columbus, people are sitting on the edge of their seats waiting to find out whether or not they're going to get the Democratic convention. Any way of handicapping Columbus, Philadelphia, New York City?
I mean, no, obviously,
we've already got Republicans.
I was pretty surprised at Cleveland. I mean, not that they can't, you know, both go to Ohio. You know, both parties went to Florida, for example, in 1972.
Yeah.
So that's happened before. I haven't seen it. The question is whether Columbus has the hotel room and the hotel space to put up all the media and all the delegates and everything like that. But that's always kind of fun. But I don't know.
They seem to they put together a proposal that showed that they have the hotel space and they put together the transportation and the infrastructure stuff that's needed. It may come down to, you know, who can raise the most money.
Well, that's always the case. And,
yeah.
And I think, you know, maybe if there was a Democratic governor of Ohio, that might help a little bit. There's certainly a Democratic mayor of Columbus, but I don't know. I mean, I didn't expect that question, and I haven't given it much thought. My guess is they're not going to go to Columbus.
Yeah.
You never know. But, I mean, ultimately, I don't think it matters to the rest of the country. It's the same, you know, if it's a Democratic, you know, it's the same left-wing communist, pro-communist candidates. So it doesn't really matter who gets nominated. I'm kidding, of course. But, I mean, everybody says, well, you know, if we have the convention in Detroit, it'll help us with the Michigan Electoral College. That really doesn't really happen.
It doesn't work. I mean, all you have to do is look at 2012. You know, Obama was in Charlotte.
Right.
Romney wins North Carolina. They go to Tampa for the Republican convention, and Obama just, you know, barely, but he won.
Yeah.
Florida. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. Although they're making the argument.
But I mean, it's exciting for the city, and it's always. I mean, has Columbus ever had a national convention? I don't believe it has.
No. They have not. Cleveland has, but Columbus is not.
Yeah.
Hey, Ken, one last quick question here. We're trying to fill the Attorney General spot. Loretta Lynch had her confirmation hearing, and she backed a lot of the president's actions. And she says she'll be independent and keep politics out of the DOJ. What do you think her chances are for that nomination?
Oh, absolutely convinced she wins, although a lot of the Republicans pointed out, well, yes, you say you're going to be independent, but Eric Holder said he would be independent too, and he turned out to be a disaster, according to these conservative Republicans. Look, basically, the Republican anger in this nomination fight is about the DOJ and Eric Holder. Loretta Lynch seems to be unbelievably, eminently qualified, and I think she handled herself perfectly, and I don't think there's going to be a close vote for confirmation at all.
Ken and Howard, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun, and I hope
as always,
Belichick, I won't mention his name again.
Political junkie Ken Rudin, WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next on 91.7 WVXU.